So the last section, the section 4 in this book, is the last 6 or 7 chapters are very beautiful. After giving the introduction to meditation technique and benefits, now the teacher is taking us to the highest realms, and the last 2-3 weeks have been very, very beautiful. How you can take your mind and fly beyond whatever is. So that we have heard and experienced today is a more practical chapter, which talks about inner repose. Repose is rest. So external rest we get when we sleep or just sit and relax and do nothing, put our feet up. But the inner repose of the mind is more important, because body we can rest, but unless the mind can be rested, all kinds of agitation, stress, problems come. So what makes the mind disturbed? There are two things. One is the sense organ. So the sense organs run out. I want to see, I want to hear, I want to touch, I want to taste, I want to smell, I want to possess, acquire. So the sense organs run out. And why do they run out? Because of the mind. It's the mind that says, oh, let me see this, let me hear this, let me get this, let me. And the mind is the main problem, not only in meditation, but throughout our life. Whenever, when there is a problem, physically you may have, but even the physical problems, I have noticed, are related to mental stress. Person who is always angry, who is always stressed, always worried, is more likely to get physical problems. Because as you have anger, it affects your liver, it affects your inner organs. And even cancer is to some extent related to people who are chronically under stress. Of course, cancer can affect even a young child, but generally that, you know, so diseases are not only physical, they're also mental. So the mind has to be controlled, and it's the mind that propels out. So suppose you have some bad habit or addiction, okay, whatever it could be, you know, desire for something, or smoking or drinking or shopping or excessive buying or possessing or whatever. So you say, I'm on the spiritual path, I should not do it. And so you stop, okay, from tomorrow I'm not going to smoke or drink or whatever, or I'm not going to go to the mall, or I'm not going to get angry, or I'm not going to get jealous. So you control your sense organs. Okay, the sense organs you have controlled. But the desire still remains inside. Like if you have given up smoking and you see somebody light up, you know, you also get desire. Or you have given up drinking, you used to drink, and then you pass a bar and your mind, or shopping or jewelry or clothes, somebody else has bought a nice new dress or got a new diamond, then you say, oh, I wish I. So even though your sense organs are controlled, the mind, the taste still remains. So first you have to start by controlling the sense organs. Okay, I will not indulge, because the more you indulge in these negativities, the more you get habituated. But then how do you control the mind? How do you remove the taste from the mind? By contact with the higher. The more you come in, without that, you cannot forcibly remove this desire from your mind. You can try, but the desire, even a subtle taste, will remain. And the more you try to push it out, the more it comes in. Like if I tell you right now, do anything, but do not think about bananas. You can't, right? The moment I say, do not think about, what do you first do is, or do not think about a camel. What will do? You will get the image of camel in. So the desire can only be eradicated by contact with the higher. So the more I come in contact with the Lord within, because all these worldly desires, these sensual desires, have a lower vibrational level, bring our mind to a lower level of objects, emotions, and thoughts. And where do we need to be? We need to be in the higher vibrational levels. It's only when your mind is constantly in that higher state of vibration, thinking about spiritual thoughts, chanting, good mantras, meditating, listening to good music, thinking good thoughts. And the more you come in contact with the Lord within, the more your mind gets purified, and the Lord is, of course, everywhere. You can see the Lord everywhere, in the church or temple or mosque, or in the flowers, in the sunrise, in the moon, in the sunset, all those. But ultimately, discover the Lord within as Om or consciousness. And as you come in contact, the more the desires themselves go away. And that only is the only way, that when I am in touch with the Lord, and also once my journey is clear that my goal is spiritual progress, it's not that it is something bad or terrible to indulge, because people say, oh, it's terrible. All it does is delay. It's going to delay your spiritual progress. Yeah, if you say, okay, I want to go ahead, I do not want to control my mind, I do not want to control my senses. If it's that much desire, you do it, two things will happen. One is the habit becomes strong, the vasana becomes strong, and the stronger your vasanas, the more extrovert you become, the further you go from the truth. So the question is, if you're extrovert, then you are running outside, your mind is disturbed. So the mind has to become introvert. Introvert does not mean you don't socialize with people, but center your mind inward, and that is the only way. And all it's going to do is delay your spiritual progress. If you want to progress, it depends how much your desire is. If your desire is strong, you will go ahead and control your mind, because allowing the mind to run us, all it's going to do is delay my progress. And if that's what you want, it's okay. You have next life. You know, but the idea is that I should make my goal clear. Another thing that drives the mind is the pairs of opposites. So at the body level, we have talked about heat and cold, health and ill health. At the mind level, joy and sorrow. You know, one day I'm happy, one day I'm unhappy. Talking about sorrow, this guy was very depressed. And he decided, you know, I'm going to commit suicide. He had too many problems in his life. So he goes to the library, because he doesn't know how to commit suicide. What should I do? So he goes to the library and he looks for books on suicide. So he finds a book, Different Ways to Commit Suicide. So, I found it. That's good. So he's going out to check out the book from the librarian. And the librarian looks at it and she says, hello, who is going to return this book? She's more worried about the book. So who's good? So in life, we are always met with pairs of opposites. Sometimes joy, sometimes sorrow, sometimes success, sometimes failure. So a mind that can remain balanced, because in life there is always going to be, you cannot say every time I flip a coin, I should be heads. No. Half the time will be heads, half the time will be tails. Some people are good, some people are bad. Some situations are good, some situations are bad. There was a great teacher in India, Swami Vivekananda, some of you may have heard. He was the first one to bring this Vedanta knowledge to the United States in 1890. That's how long ago he brought this. And he talked about one world and all the Upanishads. And so he talks very beautifully. He says that we feel that if all the evil people are eradicated and only good people remain, then how wonderful the world will be. Only good ideas, only good people, all the evil people. He says it's not possible, because it's just like saying that there should be only daytime. There shouldn't be night. No, daytime has to be accompanied by night. So good and evil are always going to be there. They were even at the time of Jesus. They were at the time of Buddha. They were at the time of Krishna and Ram. Even when Lord himself came on earth, still there were good and evil people. So then people think, if there is always going to be evil and I'm going to be unable to eradicate evil, then why should I work? Why even bother to be good? Why even bother to be helpful to others or kind or loving? Because they say that the world is going on because there is a balance. There is good and evil. They are equally balanced. And that's why the world, if good was predominant, then the good would take over. If the evil was predominant, the world would get, you know, finish itself, would be destroyed. But it is the balance that is maintaining the world as it is. So why should I work? To contribute to the balance. So at least I should do my part in keeping the balance. If all good people start thinking like this and stop working for good, then the evil will dominate. So wherever I am, it is my duty to contribute to the welfare of others, to make this world a better place, to maintain this balance. And we already talked about extrovert. The mind that is extrovert will easily get disturbed. The mind that is connected with the Lord, the introvert mind. Introvert means the one that is connected with the Om, with the Lord. Such a mind is peaceful, is calm, is always joyful and not easily disturbed. Then in this chapter, Swamiji talks about three qualities of the mind. And these three qualities are very important. In fact, even in the Bhagavad Gita that we do on Sunday, this Sunday we had the same topic, and some of the ideas I have used are very similar. And actually, there are three chapters in the entire Gita that are devoted to this topic of the gunas or the qualities of the mind. So in the mind, there are three qualities: tamas, which is ignorance, rajas, which is activity, and sattva, which is truth or purity. And the whole world is made up of those. Our mind is also made up of these three qualities, and they are in different quantities in different individuals. Some people are more tamasic. Tamasic means lazy, ignorant, selfish, don't work, just expect society to take care of them. Other people are predominantly rajasic, active, you know, working, you know, fighting, acquiring. And that is good to work, but then this gets accompanied by selfishness, where I work for myself, to make myself rich, to make myself powerful. My opinion should go, you know, whether it's in the family or whether it's in a company or whether it's in a community. So tamas is laziness, ignorance. Rajas is activity, but accompanied by selfishness, where I want more power, I want more pleasure. And then sattva is truth, purity, knowledge. So these are the three qualities which we are under the influence of. So when I wake up in the morning and I sit for meditation, or I do some yoga, or I chant some mantras, or I, you know, listen to some good music, then my mind is pure. It is in sattva. Or I do some prayers. Then I go out and work. And when I'm working, then I have more rajas. I have more activity. And then at night, when I'm tired and I'm ready to sleep, then tamas is okay. But the problem, as I mentioned, is people who are predominantly either tamasic, lazy, ignorant, or they are so active that they overwork. They work so hard that in the process they neglect their family, neglect their mental peace, neglect their spiritual growth, spiritual value. So they say that, how do we progress in our spiritual journey? So say if you have tamas, ignorance, and tamas also is not only laziness, but adjusting. Like people who say, I adjust with all situations. Adjustment is good to accommodate, but to adjust with evil is wrong. When something wrong is going on, something evil is going on, that adjustment is not good. And we find, you know, so many beautiful examples before us. George Washington, he said, I'm not going to adjust to the British ruling our country. Or Abraham Lincoln, he said, I'm not going to adjust to slavery. Or Martin Luther King, I'm not going to adjust to segregation. Or Nelson Mandela, I'm not going to adjust to apartheid. You know, or Mahatma Gandhi, I'm not going to adjust to the British ruling. So adjustment with evil is tamasic, is wrong. One has to resist, one has to fight. And also within us, if there are some negative qualities, some negative vasanas, some negative tendencies, then to adjust, oh, this is how I am. I've always been like that. You know, I've always been jealous, or I've always been lazy, or I've always been, no. Why do I, if even if I always have been, but if it's a wrong quality in me, then adjustment with wrong qualities is wrong. So I have to fight, and I have to go from tamas to rajas. And what is rajas? Rajas is activity. And how do I become more active? One is promptness, doing things right away, as Jesus called it, forthwith. Not delaying, not procrastinating, not putting off, but doing things promptly and doing things with concentration. Because we find that either we have a tendency to postpone. It's okay, I'll do it tomorrow. You know, mañana, that is a famous phrase in in Spanish. I mean, mañana, tomorrow. Anything I have to do, I'll do tomorrow. No, if it is to be done tomorrow, do it today. If it is to be done today, do it right now. So promptness and then concentration. What is tamas? Tamas also is I start some project or some activity. Ah, from tomorrow I'm going to do this. And I start working in half an hour. I'm bored. I don't feel like doing it. Especially teenagers, they are good at this. I don't want to do it. I'm bored. I'm tired. And adults also do that. Why do we get bored? Because we do not do things with concentration. So when you take up a project, either do it 100% or don't take it up. But once I have taken up a project, taken up a job or whatever, and even the idea of self-improvement, you know, the spiritual, it has to be 100% effort. Not 50%, not 70%, but 100%. So when you do something with full concentration, then A, your results are good, and B, you start enjoying the process. So I do it promptly. I do not delay. I do not procrastinate. And whatever I do, I put my full effort. But I have to watch against overwork, because sometimes rajas, as I mentioned, can become work, where I become a workaholic from morning to night. I'm working, then I take my work home, I take my briefcase, and then I'm, or on my computer, I'm working at night. I go to bed, you know, with work on my head all night. I'm dreaming work, get up in the morning, still go to work. So one has to be careful that rajas does not lead us to overwork and final stress. So take time off, especially take time off in solitude. Sit and do nothing. And we are not used to that in our society. If I don't have anything to do, I'll pick up the phone and start looking at WhatsApp or Facebook or Instagram. Or, you know, I don't, half of them I don't even know, Snapchat. So many, and so much time we waste. Sit and do nothing. Turn off your phone, sit in a garden or sit in a park or just sit in your backyard, watch the trees and make your mind calm, make your mind peaceful. And so the third state is called sattva. Sattva is truth. It is purity, purity of thought, purity of ideas. And a person who is truthful, who is pure, who is doing the right thing, even when I'm working in the world, I should do it with an element of sattva. And sattva is not only truth and purity, but unselfishness. Working for others and dedicating my activities to the higher. Even a secretary sitting at a desk, she's working from 8 to 5, but she can do it as a service of the Lord. Every client who comes in front of me is the Lord himself. You could be a nurse, you could be a lawyer, you could be an engineer, you could be anything. Whatever activity I'm doing it as a service of the Lord. Even as a housewife, if I'm cleaning the house or cleaning the dishes, I can say the Lord resides here, and so I'm cleaning the house because it is Lord's house. I'm doing the dishes, my husband, and the Lord is in my husband, is in my children. So every activity can become sattvic when it is dedicated to the Lord. And calmness. So when you practice all these qualities, your mind becomes very calm, very peaceful. And only a peaceful, calm mind can go towards the Lord. Otherwise, our mind is so agitated, running out into the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts. But when the mind is calm, and then you sit and contemplate on who I am and who the Lord is. And sattva is also accompanied, manifested as forgiveness. Where forgiveness, there is one forgiveness is that I forgive somebody because I can't resist. I can't fight this person. So I say I forgive him, you know, because he has done something wrong. But I can't do anything about it. But inside I'm still boiling, you know, this person did so much wrong. This person hurt me. Then you truly have not forgiven. True forgiveness is that even the idea that this person has done anything wrong should go out of my mind, because ultimately, even if somebody does wrong, it is let the Lord worry about it, because everybody works under the law of karma. See, by my getting angry or my getting agitated or my getting disturbed, I am not accomplishing anything except disturbance of the mind. So even the thought that I have been wronged should go away, and that is true forgiveness. That's what Jesus could practice. He could do that even though, and so many saints, if you read the lives of the Sikh gurus and the saints in India and the saints in the West, how kind and compassionate and forgiving they were. So that is how you practice sattva. And that can only happen when you have right vision. What is my goal? What is my vision? So am I practicing a tamasic vision, lazy or rajasic, selfish or pure? So my knowledge should be clear, my vision should be, and my understanding should be clear. In what vision or what understanding am I working in this world? And that's very, very important. And how will that happen? When we practice right values. And where do we get the values? The scriptures. The scriptures and the teachings of the gurus, the teachings of the saints. So if I have a right value, then I will have the right vision of life. If I have the right vision, then I'll have the right thoughts. If I have the right thoughts, I'll have the right actions. So everything starts from what you value, what is important. That's why one teacher said, Guru Swami Chinmayananda said, values are more important than valuables. See, we give a lot of importance to valuables. So this is valuable, this diamond or this house or this car. But more important than valuables is what values you practice. And that's why one has to be very conscious of how one lives one's life. So with right values, you have right vision. Right vision gives rise to right thoughts. And right thoughts, right desires, and right actions. And then the final step of inner quietude is contemplation, meditation. So when we sit for meditation, you connect with the Lord within, and we start with quietening the mind as we do all the steps. You know, we relax the body, we observe the breath, we chant the mantra. And you have to connect with the Lord, and that can only happen if my day has been, the previous day has been good, then my meditation will also be good. But if my previous day is full of quarrels and fights and anger and disturbance and agitation and overwork, then what will happen? I'll sleep with those same thoughts. And when I get up in the morning, my mind also will be filled with those thoughts. So Eknath Ishwaran is a great sage who lived in the Berkeley and Northern California area. He passed away a few years ago, and he talks in his book about living this 8-point program, where you live your life in such a way that your mind is quiet, your mind is peaceful, and then such a person goes beyond even sattva, even the idea that I should be helpful or I should be calm. Such a person does not have that. It comes spontaneously, effortlessly. If you look at these lives of saints, they don't make an effort to be calm or effort to be forgiving. For us, it may be an effort, you know, I have to calm my mind, I have to be. But for them, it comes spontaneously. Why? Because they are all the time connected with the Lord. They become one with the Lord. So by constant practice of this purity and truth and calmness and forgiveness, right vision and values, ultimately your mind becomes so still that it becomes one with the Lord, with the Self. And then such a person goes beyond anything the world can throw at him. So there's such a person, him or her, if they, no matter what problems come, no matter what difficulties come, no matter what sorrows come, no matter what pain comes, once I am connected with the Lord, then I go beyond the pairs of opposites, beyond likes and dislikes, and always live a life of peace, calmness, and abidance in the truth. And such a person is a saint, is a divine soul, and that is what we have to emulate. And that alone is inner repose. Inner repose is go from laziness to activity to purity, and ultimately go become one with the Lord, one with the Self. That's called self-realization or God-realization, which is the same. So that is the stepwise progression. And for that, one has to control the mind and always keep in touch with the higher and remain calm in the pair of opposites. So this is a very, very practical chapter. There's a lot of practical tips and points I got from this. So anybody has any questions or comments? Yes.
Yeah, you said adjustment to the evils. Basically, we don't want to adjust to the evils. But
right.
If we are against that, we can't keep our mind calm because they disturb. So in such type of things, how to calm our mind? So you should not adjust, but you should be calm.
I think what they are saying that even when I am opposing some situation, inside my mind should be connected with the Lord, and I'm doing it not as an ego. See, if you do it as I am doing it, I am resisting evil or I am fighting, then the I and my comes, that's when the mind gets disturbed. But when you say the Lord is working through me and the Lord is doing it, and if it is something wrong, I will not accommodate with that. But without getting internally, and suppose I cannot do anything about it. Suppose something is wrong at the national level or internal, I cannot do anything about it. Then all I do is just pray for peace. You know, there is some conflicts going on. I cannot solve it. But if there is something where something wrong is going on, if I can, you know, peacefully, calmly tell, suppose there's something wrong in your house or something wrong in your office, friend, so you can tell them nicely and calmly, look, this thing is not right, what we are doing. But if the person doesn't listen, then, you know, it's okay. Then I did my best. I tried my best. But you do inside remain calm. When the more you stay connected with the Lord, and the more you remove the I and my, that I am not doing it, the Lord is doing it, or it is the right thing. And it is in the scripture. So when the eye is not there, I think the mind will not be disturbed. I don't know if that answers your question. But yes, it does not mean that you go around fighting with the world or trying to change the world. You cannot change the world. They say you change and the world will change with you. So if a situation is not good or a person is not good, you yourself become good. And you will find, especially in a family, like in a spouse or in a, you know, work or something, if I become calm, I become peaceful, and I accept, the situation changes around me. So I have to change myself and become more sattvic, more pure, more calm, forgiving, and then the situation will change. So it does not mean that you go around fighting with the world. But the point is that if there is something which is particularly evil, if I can oppose it, I should. Like Abraham Lincoln was in a position, he was a president, and he had to, because that was his duty. But I think that's what, you know, Mahatma Gandhi was an ordinary lawyer. He could have kept on practicing his law and, you know, been a successful lawyer, very rich, living in a big house. But no, he chose to. But inside, he was always connected with God. So it was as if I'm doing God's work. So he was never disturbed. His ahimsa, his purity is always. Look at even Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela. They always are very were very calm people, even though when they were resisting the wrong things happening. So calmness is within. It's you know.
That's not that easy to.
With practice. See, even to quieten the mind, you need to do two things. One is right knowledge, practice, and detachment. Why do my mind gets disturbed? Because I'm attached to something and I wanted it and I didn't get it. So that is where the mind gets disturbed. Because the sense organs wanted something, my mind wanted, and I couldn't get it. So have detachment, have right knowledge of what is my goal, what is right, what is wrong, and then constant practice. So constant practice of calmness, of forgiveness, of meditation, of all these, truth, purity. So constant practice. So these three things are required: practice, right knowledge, and detachment. Detachment means I'm not depending on a particular thing for my happiness. That is how you quieten the mind. So practice those three. Right knowledge and detachment and constant practice and constant awareness. I should constantly be aware what kind of values I am, what kind of vision I have, what kind of thoughts, what kind of desires, and then ultimately that results in pure actions. But quietening of the mind is very important. Without that, nothing can be achieved in the world, and not only that, but will be constantly disturbed. So one has to be very careful about what kind of thoughts, what kind of desires, what kind of values. Constant alertness is required. I don't know, was I able to answer?
Yes. The detachment is the hardest thing. Hardest thing, detachment. You can get knowledge, you can, you know, constant practice, but detachment is,
I think that's for the women more.
More for women, difficult, yes. Because by nature, women are more giving, more loving, more.
You want to make everybody like everything.
Detachment from thoughts, so not detachment from person.
All. Detachment from a person, detachment from objects,
objects.
Detachment from ideas, you know.
Ideas are things that that's the thing that we say it's about people is because we are programmed and raised in culture to be these people.
Right.
So it's ideas about that we have to let go of. It's not
Right.
And we realize that ideas really, because if you're not taking care of moving to the self, then really you're not really, really benefiting them. You're benefiting them more when you're able to.
Right.
That we're cultured to think that we have to do this and this and this and this. We have to have 5 million birthday parties. We have to do, you know.
Exactly. And then if only this other person would change, I would be happy.
I think the duties.
Right.
You know, when you grow up as a woman, I mean, daughter, the parents will, especially in India, you should be taking care of the husband, in-laws, and kids, surroundings. Everything is depending upon the woman, the whole house. Cooking or all that.
Right.
So, and even when you get old, not because you've been doing all your life, and you try to say, okay, now I don't have to, but your vastas, your thoughts are go back and say, oh, I wonder how, I wonder so and so, I wonder, you know, I treat my mind as a child. You know, that's how I said. Mm-hmm. I just laugh and I said, okay, you've done that, now come back where you are. That's how I bring back.
Good.
But when we do all the time, all these years, it's hard to
change.
Yes, it is so hard.
But also, in my opinion, women are more connected with spirituality because their whole life is spent in giving and they have less ego. You know, less I and my, more for doing for others and all. But only thing holding them back is attachment, For men, it's more difficult because we all have a big ego, first of all, that I am somebody special. And so men, for men to grow, detachment is easier for men, but to give up the ego is very hard. And you need both, especially giving up the ego. As long as I am there, God is not going to be there. If God is there, then I cannot be there. That's what famous Saint Kabir Das Ji said. That if God is there, I am not there. If I am there, God is not there. So God alone should be there in my life. That's what they say. The path of love is so narrow that if Hari hai, toh main nahi. Main hu toh Hari nahi. So God, if God is in my life, then the ego goes away. So that is the problem. So in my mind, it is easier for women to practice spirituality because their whole life is spent in giving, in unselfishness. All the only thing they have to work on is attachment. Yes, so they have to learn to detach and learn to give up. It's okay. If it happened, fine. If not, it is still fine. So I think everybody has their own challenges in life. Yes. If life was easy, then it would not be worth living. So it's good there are challenges in life.
Life is a challenge.
Yes.
From day one till the end.
Right. But the problems we create ourselves.
Yeah.
See, it is our own karmas, our own actions that determine the results, our own vasanas, which we have cultivated. Nobody has forced upon us. So whatever good or bad is happening, it is because of my own actions, not because of my husband or my boss or my child or my neighbor or not because
of... Sometimes the surroundings influence the people.
Yes, but ultimately, whatever is happening to me is my own karma. So that once you 100% accept that whatever is happening is because of my own actions, then you don't blame anybody else. Even if somebody is hurting me or torturing me, I must have done something because of which it is happening. So then you don't blame anybody else. Then you take responsibility for your whatever is happening. Today we'll meditate on the self, the Lord within. Eyes closed. Back erect but not stiff. Consciously relax your whole body from head to toes and toes back to the head. Pay attention to each part of the body. Put your hands above your eyebrows and take slow deep breaths through the left nostril 5 to 7 times. Close the right nostril with your thumb. At home, you can do even 11 times or 15 each side. Now close the left nostril, breathe in and out through the right nostril. And pay attention to the gap between inspiration and expiration, and expiration and inspiration. Now alternate, in through the right, out through the left, in through the left, out through the right. Slow deep breaths, alternate. Pay attention to the gap. Bring your hand down to your lap or on your knees. Continue to breathe slow and deep. Full attention on the breath. When thoughts arise, turn the mind's attention to the Lord within and remind yourself, I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am not the thoughts, the ideas, the emotions. I am the Supreme Consciousness. I reside in this body and function through this body. But my higher nature is divine. That is who I really am. Stay with that idea and let the mind stay connected with the self. If the mind wanders, bring it back and again connect it with the Lord within. Thank you. Oh.